We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Travis takes a step, lofts it towards the corner of the end zone for Keon Coleman. He's got it. Death Valley has just been rezoned. You're now a part of Keon County. Touchdown, Florida State. Touchdown, FSU.
Thank you, Lee. And thank you, Jeff Coolhane and William Barr Nunn Floyd of the Seminole Sports Network from Learfield. Hear them if you download the new Varsity Network app, available for both Apple and Android. Listen to college sports live with the Varsity Network app. Alex Kirshner, that is the end, or near the end, of the fantastic Florida State and Clemson game that kicked off a fantastic college football day. My good friend, shall we put 30 minutes on and talk about that as well as the rest?
My friend Richard Johnson, live from the road somewhere near Eugene, Oregon. Yes, let's do it. You know the rules of the Split Zone Duo Sunday. Hurry up. We put 30 minutes on the clock, and we promise that we will break down everything interesting from the college football weekend in 30 minutes or less or more.
Time is a spectrum. We start the clock in 3, 2, 1. As previously stated, Florida State 31, Clemson 24. It's the statement win. It's the statement win they needed. It wasn't a blowout, wasn't demonstrative, but it was impressive. Florida State did what they needed to do and won a close, well-played game against a good team. Like, I know we're going to get our jokes in about Clemson. We're going to say they need a portal and yada, 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 blah, blah, blah.
Not a joke.
Clemson was up for it. Clemson did not get their doors blown off. Clemson looked like they belonged in this game. And obviously, a tight game comes to the end. Clemson pulls a kicker off the street. I believe they said on the broadcast he was in the New York City's financial district working up until a week ago. And Clemson yanks him off the street. And he comes in and misses what would have been a game-winning field goal at the time. Florida State drives, is unable to score themselves. But the game does go into overtime and the Noles win.
Yeah, Florida State does have some things that Clemson doesn't have right now. And I'm not talking about the kicking game. I think the Clemson kicker off the street actually made one at the start of this game. And that was very cool. This is the recurring thing with Clemson. They are up for it. Absolutely. They still have the trench talent to be respectable, competitive against just about anybody. But like, who's going to make the plays? Their wide receivers were actually pretty game in this game. Like,
yeah,
Bo Collins,
Tyler Brown played pretty well in this game.
Tyler Brown had a wonderful diving catch over the middle where he kind of came up a little bit shaken. Clemson's receivers were game, and still Florida State can just push a button. It's like, oh, Keon Coleman. Oh, Johnny Wilson. Oh, there's a huge play that completely flips the game. There aren't that many teams right now that seem to have that. Like, Alabama doesn't even have that this year. Texas certainly does. But that is like what Mike Norvell has gotten for himself is the ability to have those kind of plays and those kind of moments from those kind of players. And, you know, you just heard the sound from Keon County, South Carolina or Florida or wherever. This was a triumph of roster building, of long-term rebuilding, of Mike Norvell's program building philosophy. Like, it was just a really good day for Florida State. And for Clemson, it's tough because September is not over yet, and they are basically out of the ACC picture. Like,
which is crazy.
They cannot really win this conference. It would require acts of God on Florida State's part.
Remember from our folks, there are no divisions in the ACC anymore. Remember that. No divisions. It's winning percentage that takes you to the conference title game, and then obviously tiebreakers would be inherent. You know, I don't know how Duke's going to end this season, but like, Clemson's going to lose a tiebreaker to Duke for obvious reasons, should that scenario come up. It's things like that you don't realize. Clemson 0-2 in conference play for the first time since 2010. I mean, you can't find many seasons where they even lost two conference games, obviously, because of what they've been for the last 13, 14 years. You know, it doesn't happen overnight as far as a program going in decline. You know, the Notre Dame game was a physical ass beating last year. Losing the Palmetto Bowl to South Carolina, no matter how the circumstances of how they did it, it happened. And now you have this, where Florida State gets to stamp the fact yet again that we're back or back adjacent. I mean, that's what this is for Florida
State. Back. Yeah. I mean, they're clearly one of the best teams in college football. Richard, do you have any thoughts on Garrett Riley's game calling in overtime and at the end of this game?
You know, not awesome. But the fourth down, the last play of the game is execution. How do you throw it behind a wide receiver on a slant? I don't know if it's a miscommunication thing or whatever, but like, how do you throw it behind your wide receiver on fourth and ball game? Well, or at least fourth and ball game.
Nope.
Like that's, that can't happen.
Yep. No, it was a rough ending for Clemson, and Dabo talked about it afterwards, sounding pretty dejected. I think he said it was as tough a loss as he had ever been a part of, and I'm sure that it was. In South Bend, Indiana, Ohio State 17, Notre Dame 14. It's a whale of a football game, man. Like this was there's someone, I was talking with somebody, and I apologize for not noting who. I don't remember off the top of my head, but said there are good, you know, 14-7s or 17-14s, and there are bad 17-14 games. I'm paraphrasing. This was a good one. Like
the bad one was last year. Bad one was whatever the final score was of the game last year.
These guys were thumping. So a whole lot to go over here. I want to preface that I feel bad for just like kind of going into the coaching so much because the players left it all out there and it was
Okay.
So Ryan Day gets away with one in some respects here. The second to last Ohio State drive, which should have cost them the game, was either mismanaged or indicative of a lack of recruiting and physicality, which, by the way, we'll get to with what Ryan Day talked about after the game. Needing a yard, two plays in your Ohio State, and you either don't think you can get it with a QB push or you actually can't, and then you get jet sweep and you get stopped. It looked like Ryan Day was going to take a real, like, ugly coach game management loss here, but he didn't. But he didn't because Ohio State's defense stood the hell up, got them the ball back, and kept them in it as they had all night. And then, sort of by the grace of some dropped interceptions and some good fortune and a few absolute dimes, you must give Kyle McCord this. Absolute dimes.
It was like, really like eye of the beholder, because like he probably should have been picked twice on the drive and then dropped those dimes.
At least once, like the throw to Emeka Ibuka at the one on the 3rd and 19. And yes, it was after he took a grounding that he probably shouldn't have taken. I mean, he did put him back there, but it was an absolute bullet into a very small window. And that was the play that this game pivoted from, oh, they're probably going to lose, to, oh, they're probably going to win. And then Richard, Marcus Freeman and the Notre Dame coaching staff gave Ohio State and Ryan Day the gift of a lifetime.
Okay. I do not blame Ryan Day for not. Well, hold on. Yes, I do. Ryan Day also didn't realize they were 10 players on the field. That literally just clicked. Okay. So as we know,
They didn't run the ball where they weren't covering.
Yes. Yes. Ryan Day, after the game, obviously cuts a promo twice, by the way. It wasn't just on the field. Apparently in the press conference, he did it too. Lou Holtz went on Pat McAfee on Friday and did the Lou Holtz thing where he like was absolutely rooting for Notre Dame. That's fine. Whatever. I think he either implied or outright said that Ohio State is soft or has been soft in their biggest games, which against Michigan they have. Anyway. Then after the game, when Ohio State obviously won the game on that 1 yard touchdown plunge, Ryan Day is emboldened and talks his shit. Hey, awesome. All right, go for it. No problem with that.
No, especially against Lou Holtz, man. We need more people to be mean to Lou Holtz.
You know, whatever. Especially it's an emotional win in a road game. You know, they come from behind. I get it. But man, Notre Dame, there were 10 players on the field with the game on the line on two straight plays.
Out of a timeout.
Out of a timeout. Alex, I actually don't know what's more embarrassing for Notre Dame, to do it out of a timeout or to do it twice, or to come out and have the excuse that we didn't want to run the 11th player on, which would have been a defensive lineman or an edge defender that would have been most likely in the gap Ohio State ran to. Notre Dame said they didn't want to take a penalty there, which would have moved the ball half a foot.
So I understand in the one case, because the problem if you run a guy onto the field is that you're giving Ohio State a free play. And if they snap it while he's still running onto the field, that would have been bad. But what it really comes back to is you had a timeout and you put 10 players on the field.
Out
twice.
Of the timeout. That cannot ever.
No, can't happen.
It can't ever happen.
That coaching staff gets paid millions of dollars. You can't do that. You cannot do that. For Ohio State, fantastic. You score an 11 on 10 touchdown, and then you get to talk about how Lou Holtz was full of shit for calling out, for questioning your physicality. I don't know that Ryan Day has beaten the charges completely here, that he doesn't get the team physically up for these games. But it's a great win. It's a great win. And I'm also not sure, is Kyle McCord good? I have no idea. But he has at the least a little bit of dog in him, demonstrated on that last drive. He might not be good, but there was something that was shown on what was a very flawed but also sort of iconic last drive for Ohio State. That's where I would leave it.
For good and for ill, it's a legacy drive for Kyle McCord, honestly.
Yeah, has to be.
Penn State 31, Iowa 0. We don't have to pretend with Iowa this year. We don't have to do the thing where it's Iowa just will drag you down to hell and play your game, right? This is what I said on Wednesday, that if you're a Penn State team and you're looking to stamp yourself into this kind of playoff conversation or what have you, you don't play their game. You assert yourself. You play your game and you smoke them. And they did.
They did. I don't think the 25-point a game thing is actually going to be that dramatic. Iowa's offense is concerning in ways that they weren't even last year. And that Cade McNamara,
you mean they're not going to get close?
They might not get close, man. I mean, they're going to need to average 20s, upper 20s the rest of the way. I did the math last night. But the thing that's concerning there is that Cade McNamara looks way worse than he looked the last time he was regularly playing at Michigan. And so you wonder about that. The defense gave up 4 yards per play. And the only reason it was 31 points for Penn State was that there were some field position issues, including help by a special teams blunder for Iowa.
Which is rough when you're Iowa.
Yeah, this is the thing. We talked about it on the show last week. There's special teams. Torrey Taylor did have a dime or two in this game. He'll never stop. Iowa doesn't look like – this doesn't look like a, oh, how does he do it, good Iowa. The defense only gave up 4 yards per play, but it was a weird game where – I watched this game and it didn't feel like they only gave up 4 yards per play.
It also ended in a hurricane.
Yeah.
The second half was played in a hurricane.
It was an odd night. It was an odd night. Although the whiteout crowd at Penn State looked like they had a lot of fun. It's a great win for Penn State though, to do it in that fashion. Utah 14, UCLA 7. Dante Moore is going to be a great player. You can see it happening so vividly. If you just watch him for any stretch of time, even as a true freshman at UCLA, but this was an impossible situation for him. An impossible situation. What would you think would happen to any true freshman quarterback going into that stadium? That's exactly what happened to Dante Moore. He was sacked 7 times. He was hit several times more than that. It was like endangerment of the young man. And just, it's a baptism. He'll probably be a better player for having gone through it, but he had no chance. And the game ended with either 2 or 3 consecutive, it ended with at least 2 consecutive sacks for Utah to kind of cherry on top.
Speaking of no chance, Oregon 42, Colorado 6. The Prime show, I was front and center for it yesterday. It is really, really something. I can tell you that right now. But Oregon, man, I had heard earlier in the week that Oregon was taking this as serious as a heart attack. They were not going to get embarrassed. And by embarrassed, I don't even mean lose. By embarrassed, I mean, they didn't want Colorado to get within a certain margin of projected score that was right around 21 points. And they left no doubt in this game at all, basically from snap one. I mean, the first drive when they just waltzed down the field, you're like, oh, all right. Okay. This might be a little bit of a different deal. I think Colorado, the rent came due for Colorado on the field with a lot of stuff. There's Shador dropping back, taking sacks, forcing them into bad QB negative sacks. Play situations, which Shador did take ownership of at the end of the game in the press conference. there was Colorado's relative lack of good line play on either side. And then there was another factor. And I actually, frankly, I think Dion put this pretty succinctly after the game. And to be clear, Dion did not run from this result. You cannot run from 42-6. Dion was clear, outplayed offensive, defense, special teams. It was a butt whooping. He did the stuff that you expect him to do. He's too smart to go out there and like blame Colorado or say it was a fluke, or blame Oregon and say it was a fluke. But one thing he did say, I think is pretty salient, which is, and I'm paraphrasing him to an extent, he said basically like, teams aren't playing our team, they're playing me. And yes, we all know why that is, but I think that is the case. And Oregon beat Dion, they beat the training staff, they beat the coaching staff, they beat everybody on Colorado's roster to a pulp yesterday. But it doesn't mean I don't think that's true.
I love coach heat. I love coach heat. We need more of it. Seems like we're getting a lot of it this season. So I saw that Dion hugged Phil Knight on the field before the game, but the reason Dan Lanning was so fired up to beat Dion and like talk about it, I mean, that's because he knows Uncle Phil signs the checks and Dion and Nike don't always get along, right? Like that's what's happening there.
That is not my read of the situation. My read of the situation is Dan Lanning is like a lot of football coaches and like quite literally, I think, offended to his core at the amount of attention Colorado has gotten without doing much beyond winning three games. Two of them not terribly convincingly, although okay, impressive, given what we thought about them coming into the season.
I prefer the 3D chess angle, but you're probably right. Wazoo 38, Oregon State 35, Cougars Pac-2 champs. The game was not this close, to be clear. Like, you look at that final, you'd think it was a real back and forth. Wazoo was up 21 in the third quarter in this game, and the three-point margin was owed to a very, very late touchdown for Oregon State. Cam Ward has made the leap. He's not going to get a ton of attention because Michael Penix Jr. and Caleb Williams play in this conference, and Bo Nix plays in this conference, but he is one of the best quarterbacks himself right now in college football. He's a really fun throw on the run type guy. And Josh Kelly and Kyle Williams for Wazoo, these two receivers, were both clowning dominant against a really good Oregon State defense. So a huge night for Wazoo. I think you have to wonder if they might scare this conference a little bit.
Alabama 24, Ole Miss 10. God, Lane Kiffin's got to be sick about this. Dude. Because, and I think Jackson Dart said as much after the game, like, this is probably as bad as Alabama's going to be. I mean, it's the fact that you couldn't get them in this game is tough, man. Tough.
It's a win for the Stephen Godfrey frame of analyzing college football, which is to remember who you are as a school. And like Ole Miss just did what Ole Miss does here. This is an embarrassing result for Lane Kiffin. No way around it. You get chesty the way that he got chesty this week. You crow at your press conference about how you figured out who's calling the defense and it's not the guy they say. We think we know what they're doing. You maybe troll Nick Saban by trying to imitate him and his mannerisms at your press conference. You talk a lot coming into this game. You throw some chum out there about how this might be one of the last times that you coach against this guy, which you know Nick didn't like. And then you score 10 points. And you can't put this one on your lack of NIL money or your student section not staying at games or whatever. It's a weak, it's a wounded Alabama, and you score 10 points. It's not why you get paid the big bucks.
Citrus Bowl defense, good. Texas A&M 27, Auburn 10. The Jimbo thing is one of the funnier things you'll ever see on a football field, honestly.
Do you mean when he apparently like attempted to deter an Auburn defensive touchdown by standing several feet on the field, like further on the field than Mike Tomlin did that one time?
I don't think he was Tomlin-ing, to be honest with you. I think he was like really pissed and demonstrative and just got way out of the coaching box and then like just created that hilarious situation.
I agree. He doesn't want to create cause that could be used in a firing proceeding. So I don't think that he went on the field on purpose.
LSU 34, Arkansas 31.
I want to ask you this question.
What do we got?
I do want to go back. The Auburn offense, if you had a look at it,
No, by choice. Absolutely
okay,
not.
Okay, good. Just, I wanted to make sure that you hadn't, no need. Let's move on. LSU and Arkansas.
Thank you. LSU 34, Arkansas 31. Arkansas played really well in this game. I think LSU is capital G good. I think they're going to smoke Alabama when we get around to it in a couple weeks. But Arkansas also up for it in this game. It wasn't really two turnovers. It was the one was at like the very end of the game, which, okay, you don't want. But, you know, I think that Arkansas came into this game and could have very easily got outclassed, especially when KJ Jefferson was forced to throw and throw a pretty decent amount. But they really hung in with this LSU team and I think proved a lot about how feisty they're going to be here as we kind of get into the thick of the SEC schedule. South Carolina 37, Mississippi State 30, sort of a mid bowl, but Mississippi State definitely played a lot better than they did last week. And South Carolina, you got like, it stinks because you're getting like, you're getting a Spencer Rattler that's not that's taking care of the ball. You're getting a Spencer Rattler that's not putting it really in bad situations. You're getting the Spencer Rattler that I think you need, but you're not getting some other things. And some of that's due to injuries. Some of that's due to deficiencies. Yeah. But
Juice Wells,
if you got more, you may have something really, really fascinating. But they don't right now. What is fascinating, though, is Missouri. Missouri 34, Memphis 27. Is this a says more about Memphis thing? Where are you falling on this?
I don't know. This is one where I think I end the game feeling kind of good about everybody involved. Mizzou, and we talked about this after the Kansas State game, has really good receivers. Luther Burden is going to be all SEC. It might be the best receiver in the SEC this year. Marquise Johnson, large bills only, one catch for a 76-yard touchdown. Mizzou's offense is, even with a quarterback that I don't think anyone is going to mistake for a Heisman winner, is pretty potent and can do some things against good competition. On the Memphis side of things, like, they're competitive against what might be a pretty decent SEC East team this year. I don't know where I am right now on either of these coaches. Like, we and I have talked about the fireability of both of them in even the last couple months. But there's reason for optimism for both of these teams. We'll see if that holds up as they respectively get into conference play. Kentucky 45, Vanderbilt 28. Kentucky 4-0 and wins easily here despite Devin Leary not having much of a day and throwing some picks. Barry and Brown for Kentucky, though, Richard, good player.
This game got late early. Florida better have it next week or they're going to get beat. Tennessee 45, UTSA 14. This one was pretty much never ever in doubt, but Frankhurst didn't play, so you know, you got that.
Dude, UTSA is not it might be a lost year for UTSA. I mean, we'll see as they get
which
into
is
the,
tough man because of the amount of talent, the amount of expectation, the high ground that they came into this league in. It's not,
yeah, it ain't, and it's like Frank Harris's seventh year or at least sixth year in college. It's not, they haven't actually gotten into the conference yet, but it is not going the way that they certainly hoped that it would. In the Big Ten, Maryland 31, Michigan State 9. Terps, awesome. I don't want to be ranked as a Maryland alum this week. Spare me before the Ohio State game. They should be 5-0 for that game after they beat somebody next week. I forget which bad Big Ten team it is. And they really should be 7-1 heading into the stretch drive like 5 weeks from now. So did what you had to do against a Michigan State team that, by the way, Richard, could lose to Rutgers this year. In fact, 50-50.
Michigan 31, Rutgers 7. You absolutely know how this game went. Rutgers, I think, is impressive. Rutgers, you know, Rutgers used to get 70-0'd by Michigan, right? That was the thing. And I'm not going to say this is losing close because it's not. I think we understand what Michigan is. And as we will continue to say, we are not going to make any opinions on Michigan besides Michigan is great until they play somebody. And they did what they had to do against Rutgers. They took care of business.
The play of this game was one of the great rollout style punts that you'll ever see in your life from Flynn Appleby of Rutgers in the first quarter. 75 yarder down inside the 10. Maybe you saw it on Twitter or you watched the game live. But unfortunately, you do need to score to be competitive with Michigan. Northwestern 37, Minnesota 34. Richard, you want to know who took the worst loss of the day in college football in terms of opponent and mannerism?
Ugly loss.
It was It's not the one you want. Not the one you want to have on the resume for PJ. Like, a real bungling by Minnesota. I want to pause to point out, I'm happy for the Northwestern players. Actually, I got to rethink that. I don't really know all the facts of that story. But good for Northwestern to get a win in the Big Ten, which I don't know that I thought was going to happen this year. Minnesota, game management-wise, execution-wise, very, very bad at the end of this game. On a basic level, they give up a game-winning touchdown on the first play on defensive overtime after kicking a 20-yard field goal from 2 or 3 yards from the end zone. That doesn't look great. Brevin Spanford, the tight end for Minnesota, who was supposed to be their best player, has not had much of a year. He dropped a touchdown in the end zone at the end of this game. The punt downing team for Minnesota allowed a touchback that shouldn't have been a touchback and would have made Northwestern go the full 99 yards when they were trying to get the game to overtime. Ugly. It was ugly. What can you say?
Indiana 29, Akron 27. Speaking of ugly, good God. It's getting late early for Indiana, but he's got a $20 million buyout.
It's not good, but it could have been worse. Could have lost. Wisconsin 38, Purdue 17. Wisconsin continues to be sort of in between what it is and I think what it wants to be on offense. They're still good at giving it to Braylon Allen. Like, he can still do things when he gets the ball. Ches Malusi got hurt and looked very hurt, so it might be a whole lot of Braylon Allen moving forward. Nebraska and Illinois respectively beat La Tech and FAU narrowly. Richard, do you want to win the Big Ten West? I could maybe do it.
You know how this goes. You know the score here.
But this is setting up to be, I don't know that it's ever been this lopsided in the last year of it. And it's always pretty lopsided. They don't have to play a Big Ten championship game this year. It might be for the best if they did not. It just might be for the best if they didn't. Because I think the best champion for the Big Ten West has to be either Wisconsin or Iowa. And how did it look last night? It's tough. Richard, you're wearing a Home Field Apparel shirt right now. I am wearing a Home Field Apparel shirt right now. For our beloved YouTube audience, let's show them. I got my Sad Husky. You got some Home Field specific brand stuff. Home Field Established 2018. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code SZD20 and you get 20% off your first order. Our friends there have been very much in their bag lately, as they are, well, pretty much all the time. By the way, I am looking forward to seeing a lot of you, hopefully. Anyone who is in the Athens, Georgia area for a home field event on UGA's homecoming weekend at the beginning of November. I'm going to finally get a trip into Athens with our friends from Homefield. Very excited about that. Stay tuned for more details. Richard, the Pac-12, USC 42, Arizona State 28.
I thought Arizona State did pretty much all they could to be in this game. Pulled out as many of the stops as you could and tried to figure it out. USC's offense can just score at will in a way that is like pretty stunning.
They're very good. They're like the kind of good that they would probably score a few touchdowns against a bad NFL defense, like that kind of good. Like, these are a bunch of guys who are going to be NFL rookies in the next 2 years, and they look like it when they play against college kids. The USC defense, Richard, ugh, man, like the tackling, it's highly concerning. Like, there's no reason to think that Washington is going to score anything less than a billion points.
However, they might score 2 billion.
Yeah. It has like Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma vibes at the moment.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have to play like this. You can choose to not play like this.
You can choose to tackle Alex Grinch. You could work on that. You know, what's a Wednesday practice for, if not for some tackling drills? You know, give your guys a few days in the ice bath and get ready for the weekend. Washington a lot, Cal a little. You know how that went. It went how every Washington game goes.
UNC 41, Pitt 24. Drake May threw a touchdown with his left hand because he's an insane football player. Georgia Tech 30, Wake 16. Wake ain't it right now. Quarterback change, obviously there's no Sam Hartman. You are seeing what life is like after Sam Hartman. It is not a very pleasant reality.
No, the dropbacks to pass for Wake in this game were painful. Mitch Griffiths is doing a tough job to replace, I think, the best quarterback Wake's ever had, but it's not going very well. Syracuse 29, Army 16. Cuse gets through conference play unbeaten. I saw for the first time ever. How? But great.
Thought Army was going to win this game. Wrong. NC State 24, UVA 21 from Friday. It's only on here because this was an absolute farce of an ending. Virginia gets into the red zone. It throws a touchdown. There's a penalty on the play, which knocks it back. There was an offensive lineman who basically headbutts a defensive lineman. That sends it 15 yards back for the two-point try. They've miraculously get the two-point try by like sort of throwing up a prayer ball into the end zone. The quarterback for Virginia had his helmet sort of ripped off on the way on the ground. And instead of like putting it right back on, he like flexed to the sideline in the crowd, which got him an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, which then forced the kickoff to be 15 yards ahead. So that meant, or 15 yards behind, which means that NC State is going to get the kickoff in favorable range, which they then used to get into favorable field goal range. The first attempt at the field goal gets blocked, but it gets blocked because a NC State or a Virginia special teams player jumps over the long snapper, which is a penalty, to block the field goal. It's then moved forward again into like chip shot adjacent field goal range, and NC State kicks the field goal and wins the game. What?
UVA, it's not a good time right now. Also not a good time right now for the Baylor Bears. Texas 38, Baylor 6. I have nothing new on Texas. They're great, and they looked like it. Baylor is a level of bad that I did not think they would ever be under Dave Aranda.
Oklahoma 20, Cincinnati 6. Welcome to the Big 12, fellas. Iowa State 34, Oklahoma State 27. Let's do both of the Oklahomas at the same time here because they're going to play, and it's going to be quite something.
That game Oklahoma was moved up off of Thanksgiving. That's like soon, isn't it?
It's soonish, not Thanksgiving. Yeah. Oklahoma's defense, I think, may be G good, frankly. I don't know about capital G, but good.
I think Brent figured it out. I think he did.
Oklahoma State, it's Bedlam Twin on offense, is not lowercase good, capital G good, any good. As the timer
30 minutes off. And we're still not even close to done, but we'll keep it moving.
Well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, probably mine. Oklahoma State at least only played one quarterback this game. They had been playing three, you'll remember, and Alan Bowman was fine. Ollie Gordon running it was actually quite good, but the defense let them down here against a pretty bad, or had been bad, Iowa State offense. Good for Iowa State, good for Rocco Beck, their quarterback, who replaced Hunter Deckers amid scandal before the season, had his best game yet. Richard, you were treating it like it was a silly take for me that Oklahoma might go 11-1, but I mean, I think they're best team in the league other than Texas.
I wasn't.
Sorry, Godfrey was. You're right, yeah. Steven. Steven was. I think that Oklahoma looks pretty good on defense, and shockingly, like, cats and dogs are living together. The question about Oklahoma is, can they score? And is Dylan Gabriel up to it? When was the last time offense was the question for Oklahoma? I don't know. I might not have been alive.
West Virginia 20, Texas Tech 13. Okay. That's what we want from West Virginia. I believe Tyler Shuck got hurt in this game, I saw somewhere.
Yeah, he did.
But yeah, West Virginia, this is what you want.
West Virginia's offense is about as bad as they said, but that defense is feisty and has taken advantage, yes, of Pitt being whatever it was and Texas Tech not looking sharp, but the defense has to play to make the offense not look sharp. Neil Brown might mess around and save his job. It's conceivable. Like, they don't look like the worst team in the Big 12, which a lot of people thought they might be. And I do think, Richard, that we're starting to see the end of the honeymoon phase for Joey McGuire at Texas Tech, which is 1-3. And we'll see where that leads. I'm not saying it's leading to like him not being the coach. I just mean they need to maybe recalibrate a little bit after like good vibes only for a year. We'll see. TCU 34, SMU 17.
How ridiculous does TCU feel? The more games they play and the more games Colorado plays.
Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks and months. But yeah, last iron skillet game for a while because TCU decided to pause that rivalry, which I think sucks. Yeah, Kansas 38, BYU 27. Kansas is 4-0, and it's like a routine thing. They were 4-0 last year, too. Lance Leipold is good at this, and BYU helped them in this game by coughing up not one, but two defensive touchdowns and another turnover for a 3-0 margin there. Hard to win games, BYU, if you do it that way.
Kansas State 44, UCF 31. It was always going to be a rude welcome to the Big 12 for UCF to have to play this game in Manhattan, I think. That's going to be tough. Kansas State, yeah, this is just what they do. Similarly to, it's just what Utah does. This is just what Kansas State does.
They got another running back, man.
Yes, EJ Gittens. Yes.
They got another running back. He's not like Deuce Vaughn. Like, he's not one of these small scat back looking guys. He's just big and strong and fast. All things that are good if you can put them in one package for a running back. So, very nice win for Kansas State. Marshall 24, Virginia Tech 17. Richard, Virginia Tech is, approaching like a low point. I hope they've reached it. I hope it's not still tunneling, but they are bad. Like, the bottom of the ACC between them, UVA, Boston College, yes, is a grim situation.
I did not think Marshall was this good.
I don't know how much it means. Remember, they were favorites by like 5 or 6 points.
They won
by a touchdown. Charles Huff can coach. I agree with you. I think that even if you are playing a flawed Virginia Tech, like a couple years in a row to win these games against power opponents. They obviously beat Notre Dame last year. I'd like to see them be more competitive this time around in the Sun Belt, but that's a program with upside for sure. Wyoming 22, App State 19 in Laramie. A good game as expected. It's going to taste bad for App because Andrew Peasley and Wyoming could not throw the ball on them, could not move the ball very well. App had a pick six in this game and was up double digits and ultimately lost in a fashion that I will leave to Reese Monaco of the Wyoming Sports Network from Learfield to explain to you.
Good snap. Hold is down. It's blocked! It's blocked! Hawkins picks it up! He's going to go at the 30, 20, 10! Touchdown! Touchdown, Cowboys! They take the lead! Oh, my goodness!
Are you kidding?
20-19! The Cowboys will go for two!
Powder River, baby. Great win for the Pokes. Arkansas State 44, Southern Miss 37. Richard, does Southern Miss replace Arkansas State in your mind off of this as like the most doomed looking Sun Belt team?
Let's give it a couple weeks. I need to see it again from Arkansas State. Louisiana 45, Buffalo 38. Buffalo at 0-4 is not in a great place right now.
No. Also with an FCS loss again.
Yes.
Troubling for Buffalo. Troy 27, WKU 24. Hilltoppers couldn't do a damn thing here on offense. The main thing I think is an impressive showing by Troy's defense. Troy hit a Hail Mary going into halftime in this game from 40 yards out, and that winds up being critical. Troy fans will take that as kind of a payback for giving up a Hail Mary at the buzzer against App last year. Nice to get one going in your favor for a change.
Tulsa 22, Northern Illinois 14. Don't want to do the transitive thing, but Northern Illinois is not the team that beat Boston College, or what are we thinking there?
Well, we're doing the transitive thing. I mean, that is what we're doing. The NIU that beat Boston College has not won another game and now has losses to FCS, Southern Illinois, Nebraska and Tulsa, and was 119th in SP Plus coming into this week. We can also note that Louisville scored 56 on Boston College. So I'm using NIU to draw out another point about the bottom of the ACC. It's tough. What's not tough, Richard, is the USF Bulls 42, Rice 29. Rice is an improved version of Rice, albeit still Rice, but this was a lot of fun for USF.
JT Daniels got hurt, by the way, in this game.
JT Daniels doesn't play defense, and USF scored 42 points. Byron Brown, well, fun quarterback.
I was expecting Rice to score 40-ish.
Yeah. Byron Brown throws for 435, runs for another 82, also caught a two-point conversion on a trick play in this game. But the real person to the game to know about here for USF is one of the best receiving games you'll ever see in college football. Nyheim Simmons, 272 on 8 catches on 8 targets, 5 different catches of 42 plus. FCS transfer up from Wagner. Hard to have a better football game as a wideout than he did for USF in this game. Optimism in Tampa. It's a wave. Catch it.
Sure. Georgia Southern a lot. Ball State very few. Georgia Southern didn't turn the ball over 5 times and won by a lot. Who could have predicted that? Old Dominion 10. Texas A&M Commerce 9.
This one's on here because this is a team that is in its second year of not just not just FCS ball, or not just, you know, playing against teams like Old Dominion, but it's in its second year since coming up from Division II and went for a 2-point conversion to almost beat Old Dominion at the end of this game. Worrisome for the Monarchs, I would say, but a win's a win. All right, Richard, Georgia State 30. We're into the weeknighters here. Coastal 17. I think I have to reassess some priors on Georgia State. Thought they'd be bad. Thought they'd be firing their coach, Sean Elliott. The body of work is still small, but everything is trending in a much different direction than that. They're 4-0. Darren Granger is one of the better quarterbacks in the G5. My question is, what the fuck, Coastal? They look terrible. I think the party's Coastal over.
Struggles to run the ball, which is not awesome when you've really, like, I know Grayson McCall is a good player, but like, they've prided themselves on their varied run game in recent years, and that is now gone under Tim Beck. Tim Beck's offenses didn't run the ball well at NC State over the last 2 or 3 years. They are not doing it here. It is a troubling trend. The Coastal Carolina thing is over as you have known it to be over the last few years. That's a prior you also need to readjust. Boise State 34, San Diego State 31. Boise's wide receivers, I don't think, are really that great, but I think the quarterback, a little promise there from Talen. A little promise.
Yeah, Talen Green was chucking it a bit in this game. San Diego State actually got some scoring in this game, but their defense, which has been their strength, let them down. Talked about how I feel about them last week. Think it's going to be time for a change there fairly soon. Air Force 44, San Jose State 20. Air Force looks to me like the best academy this year and like a pretty good commander-in-chief's candidate. Granted, there's only 3, so saying they're a pretty good candidate, sort of a captain obvious take when there's only 3 teams, but I think that they are in a good position there. Toledo 49, Western Michigan 31. Penny Boone for Toledo, former Maryland guy, goes over 200 yards. Ohio 38, Bowling Green 7. Curtis Rourke only 196 yards, but 3 touchdowns. I think if you're looking at MAC favorites right now, it's the 2 teams that were in the conference title game last year. It shapes up like those 2 look like the class of this league again this season. New Mexico 34, UMass 31. UMass is 1-4 and misses one of its few winnable opportunities. But for New Mexico, that's a second win, and it keeps alive maybe a slim chance at flirting, talking about maybe a bowl game. Would love to see it.
Having a conversation about bowl eligibility.
Look, there's different ways to evaluate teams going through the year, and I think that New Mexico is clearly in the, it's time for the discourse about whether we should have a discourse about a potential bowl opportunity for the Lobos.